Malik Foster, apologize now. This guy's got a family. Saved by Vidiello. Rodrigo Lopez. It's improbable. It's indomitable. It's another cup set, and Sacramento Republic are off to the final.
Football America is live and underway here on ESPN Plus. Without Hercules Gomez, I am Sebastian Salazar. Great to have you with us. And then there were two teams left. That's all that's left in the U.S. Open Cup. We will discuss that plenty throughout the show. We also have coming up Mauricio Pedrosa, who's going to join us to discuss all the latest news out of Liga MX and with the Mexican national team, plus a one-on-one with U.S. men's national team goalie Zach Steffen ahead of his season with Middlesbrough in the championship. Casey Keller will also join us to discuss not just the interview with Zach Steffen, but also American goalies at large and specifically their work in the championship over the years. But there's only one place to start this edition of Football Americas, episode 149, by the way, and we're going to start it with the magic of the Cup. U.S. Open Cup semifinals last night. We're starting with a nightcap. Sacramento against Sporting Kansas City. 0-0 into the second half. First real chance of the day. Gondan the shot. Pulskamp, the goalie for Sporting Kansas City, with a huge save on Keiko Gondan to keep us scoreless and push this one into extra time. Tension throughout this match. Into extra time, Sporting Kansas City would get some chances, none better than this one. Daniel Chaloui off the underside of the crossbar, then ricochets out of bounds. Another look at it here, Sporting Kansas City getting some momentum in extra time, but can't put it past Daniel Vitiello, the goalie for Sacramento Republic. So we're headed to a penalty shootout. 4-3, Sporting Kansas City here when, ay mamacita, Malik Foster does this. Are you kidding? I don't even know what I'm focused on here. Am I focused on the Panenka? Because it's pretty wild to do it in a situation like this. Am I focused on the backflip celebration? Because that's pretty sweet to do in a moment like this. Or am I focused on this? He's putting everybody to sleep like Steph Curry. Granzusi steps up. Oh, Vitiello, a huge save. He'd been waiting for his moment all night, and he makes the play here. The save, which puts the game in the balance. And who else? El Capitan, Roro, Rodrigo Lopez from the spot with those shorts on all the way up. Put Sacramento Republic into the final. They beat Sporting Kansas City 5-4 on penalties after a scoreless draw through not just 90, but 120 minutes. Absolute scenes at Heart Health Park in Sacramento. Unbelievable stuff. Sacramento becoming the first non-MLS team to reach the final of the U.S. Open Cup since 2008, when the Charleston Battery reached the final only to fall to my beloved D.C. United. All right, for more on this game, let's welcome in the man who you just saw in the highlights. I'm pretty sure they're just putting the finishing touches right now on his statue outside the stadium there in Sacramento. Rodrigo Lopez, the captain. My man, how you feeling this morning? Because I saw you cramping up late in that game, brother.
Oh, so not even late in the game. I was cramping 70 minutes in. I was dying, man. I'm not going to lie to you. But it was all heart. I mean, our team performed, you know, well. You know, both teams were fairly tired. You know, the Kansas City came from a game against LAFC this weekend, and we played Phoenix this weekend in warm weather. So we were both fairly tired, and you know, a lot of legs were cramping up last night. But you know, obviously we were able to get through it.
Yeah, man, I'll say you were able to get through it. Hey, tell me a little bit about the atmosphere there and maybe how it impacted the game, because it definitely felt, you know, to your point, like there was some tired legs late in that one. You got a packed house. They really seemed to be pushing you on. Is that fair to say? What I saw on ESPN Plus that came through the screen, did that impact you guys on the field?
Oh, yeah. I mean, our fans, I've said it before, we have the best fans in the league, in USL Championship, and they showed up last night. They showed up, you know, even during warm-ups, we felt the love, we felt excitement from the city, from the fans, and you know, it's something that we feed off. So you know, you're cramping, but you sense this sensation from the fans, the love, the support, the passion, and you know, you have to get through it. And somehow I got through it. I was able to take a PK, but after it, I was done.
All right, so let's talk about the penalty shootout. I want to get to your penalty and the celebration afterward, but we got to start with Malik's Panenka. I mean, what are you thinking? First of all, do you guys know he's going to do that when he's walking up? Have you seen that in practice?
You never know what Malik's going to do. He's just that type of player. He's special. He's, you know, since day one, I fairly try to get really close to him because, you know, Malik is just one of those rare players. He's so special on the field. He's hard to open up to, but when you open up to him, he's an amazing person. And he's been working so hard on his fitness, on being a team player, being a player that we need. And he came on and changed the entire game. I mean, he was phenomenal for us. He held the ball. You know, he's not the biggest guy, but man, he has the heart of a warrior, you know, and he came on and did fairly well for us. And that PK was just icing on the cake because it had my heart up to here probably. I mean, he scared me.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it. But a special moment. You know, it's funny you mentioned his hold-up play because I'm watching the game, and, of course, everyone's talking about what he did in the penalty, the Panenka, and, of course, that's what's going to go viral. But, like, the whole game, he's matching up with dudes a foot taller than him, and they cannot get to the ball. And I was really blown away by his hold-up ability, especially for a guy that size. Let's talk about one of the other heroes from last night, Daniel Vitiello, your goalie, to make that save, and not just on anybody, right? On a pro's pro, on Graham Zusi in that spot, man. You must have been happy for your goalie.
No. He had a phenomenal night, not just the PK. I mean, obviously that was, you know, for me, I was just praying that he would save that PK because I was next. And, you know, obviously if I would have make it or miss it, we still had a chance. But if Susie makes that PK, obviously it puts a lot more pressure on me. And Danny Vitiello came up huge, but not just in the PKs. He came up huge during the whole 120 minutes. Our defense was phenomenal. It was just, you know, a night where we needed him, and he came up huge. For me, he was the man of the match. And he's been doing it throughout the whole season, so I'm not surprised. And we have two goalkeepers that, I mean, in every position right now, that's I could say that we're really deep. And we're fortunate to have two very good goalkeepers at the moment. And Vitiello has been doing it right now as a starter, but Carlos as well has been putting in some good shifts and played in the league game last game and did fairly well as well. So Vitiello deserves a man of the match for me last night.
Yep, man of the match, and he gives you the assist, right? Because then he gives you the opportunity to be the hero in the fifth and final penalty. So once that shot from Graham Zusi gets stopped, what goes into your mind? Walk us through the walk up and then eventually what you did from the spot.
Seba, honestly, as someone that's been through, you know, I was the first signing in Sacramento Republic history, and just last night, it was just the perfect script again. It just always seems to be a perfect script for me to be the guy to come through. I sometimes I just don't want it. I mean, I'm more of a team player. I just rather have the team win and you know, move on to better things and win championships, win league games, whatever it is. But again, it came up to me again, and as he saved it, and I said, "Hey, I gotta hold it up for the city. I had to hold it up for my teammates. I didn't want to let them down." And obviously, you know, the rest is history.
So tell me about your day today, right? Because the day after is always the most fun. Have you been getting around town? What's the buzz in Sacramento about the game last night? Has anybody mentioned your post penalty celebration knee slide? Because that's really the only thing I can knock from last night, brother.
Oh, no. Yeah, I went to my favorite place to go eat today, and a good friend of mine works there, and he treats me nice every time. So we spoke about it. We did. But yeah, I was cramping 70th minute. So when the PKs came, I was just praying that I would get through the PKs, that I wouldn't cramp on my run to shoot the ball. And once I saw the ball hit the net, I was just so excited that I had I don't even know what I did. I was just so excited. And as soon as I went down, I felt the cramp, and it didn't feel good, but at the same time, it was such an enjoyment just watching everyone celebrate, and my teammates, coaching staff, everyone together. You know, we're a big family, and just seeing everyone so happy and excited for me, you know, it did the night.
All right, so it sounds like the celebration around town was pretty awesome then, as you celebrated here, advancing to the U.S. Open Cup Finals. What about the reaction, not from around Sacramento, but on social media, Rodrigo? And I'm wondering if you've seen this. So Major League Soccer, of course, has an official account, and they tweeted out about the U.S. Open Cup Final, which is set to be played between Orlando City and Sacramento Republic. MLS did find a way to add Orlando City. They didn't at you guys. They didn't at Sacramento Republic. They're not giving you guys love. A lot of people see this as a sign of disrespect, Roro. What do you make of it?
I mean, I'm pretty sure they don't want us to win the Open Cup, but, you know, we're here. We don't focus on what other people think, to be honest. Right now, we're actually focused on winning a game on Saturday night, an important league game against Charleston, and obviously when the time comes, we're going to be excited for this game. It's a championship game, and you know, those are games that you want to win. Those are games that many dream of, many in probably their whole career don't get to, you know, live a game like that, and we're fortunate to be there in that spot. So when that time comes, we'll focus on it, but right now we're not. I don't think many of the guys are really focused on what the MLS thinks or what they have to offer, or if they add us to their post or not. It's okay. Don't worry about it. We've knocked out three teams from their league, and it's okay. I feel like Sacramento should be in MLS, and hopefully one day it becomes a reality. But right now we're just focused on now league play. And when that time comes, September 7th, I believe it is, we'll focus on Orlando.
Like you mentioned, it is a ways off, right? But what do you know about Orlando, and what are your kind of initial thoughts on the matchup? Because, you know, it's one of the biggest games that you're going to play, that Sacramento Republic is going to play. I know there's games between now and then, but you got to already start thinking about this Orlando team, I'm sure.
Oh, no, it's a team that I know. I've witnessed some of coaches' teams. He coached in Mexico a few years, Pareja, and obviously in MLS, but he, you know, he builds good teams. He's a good coach. He's a winner. Teams are very dynamic. And, you know, obviously I haven't seen as much as I wanted to, but to beat New York Red Bull 5-1 yesterday, it must say that they're pretty good, you know? So we have to be ready. When, like I said, when that time comes, we'll prepare, but we know we're up for a fight. We went to LA, we won the game there, and, you know, against a great team, and now we have to go to Orlando and do the same thing. We can't be afraid of anyone at this point. We have nothing to lose. We've obviously deserved to be where we're at now, and we just have to believe in each other, and we do. So that's something that's gotten us to this point.
Roro, as great a story as this is, it's not your first rodeo. You've been around this region a lot. So I wonder, what would it mean for you to be the captain of a second division team to win the Open Cup? And I think what's important to acknowledge here is the CONCACAF Champions League ticket that would come to that. What would that mean to you and to Sacramento Republic?
Oh, man, that would be amazing. You know, just playing in prestigious tournaments like that would be amazing for the city, amazing for this franchise, amazing for our league, to be honest. I was around in 2014, 2013, in USL Championship, and the league's grown so much that, you know, for this league to go this far, I think would be huge. You know, they talk about promotion, relegation, and for me, I feel like it's fairly close. I feel like it should happen in this country. I think it'd be great for the sport in this country, and we only continue to grow. You know, the game here has grown so much, and obviously MLS is a huge stone to that development. But USL has played their parts as well, and we're ready for it. You know, we're ready for whatever comes our way.
Absolutely. Sacramento Republic in the CONCACAF Champions League. I can see the headlines now. Rodrigo Lopez, thanks so much for the time, man. Appreciate you. And if you keep going this way, I'm sure you'll be back on Football Americas very, very soon.
Sounds good. We got to get you a jersey, though. I don't know. I don't see you wearing the Sac Republic jersey.
Hey, bro. All right. Just get it. Go to the kids section there. Give me a youth extra large and we'll be good. Have your people talk to my people. Schmedium. A slim fit Schmedium is the size for your boy. Ro, thanks again, man. Great to have you.
We got to get Herc a large now after his vacation, though.
So. Ooh, yeah. He claims to have been working out, but we'll see. He needs that XL after the vacay. Thanks, man. Thanks again.
Sounds good. Thank you, Seba.
There he is, Rodrigo Lopez, the captain of Sacramento Republic. So who are they going to get in the U.S. Open Cup final? Well, this game actually was played earlier in the evening yesterday. Orlando City and the New York Red Bulls picked this one up in first half stoppage time. Lewis Morgan from a tight angle going to put the New York Red Bulls on top. Remember, outside of supporter shields, this team has never won a major trophy, going all the way back to the Metro Stars days. Is this the moment? Well, it looked like it for a moment there. But just before the half, Orlando strikes back. Cesar Araujo with the goal off the corner kick. They say set pieces. Always a difference maker. Difference maker there. 1-1 at the half. Second minute of the second half. Mauricio Pereira putting Orlando City up 2-1. Tight finish there from the number 10. 62nd minute. It's Cesar Araujo again. Catches the volley clean. His second of the game. It's not quite the Roro knee slide, but we'll allow it. From Araujo. Puts it past the keeper. Orlando City at that point up 3-1. Could they find a fourth? Yes. Facundo Torres in the 74th. Look out. Orlando City running away with it. 4-1 over the New York Red Bulls. Another one coming. Benji Michel, yes. La Manita and the flip. 5-1. Orlando City, the fighting Tim Fontenot. What's up, Timmy? I know you're celebrating this one. As Orlando City are headed to the U.S. Open Cup Final, and there we see it. Not a whole lot of history for teams from Florida making deep runs in this competition, but Orlando City is certainly ready to add to it. Orlando City then are into the U.S. Open Cup Final, where they will face off against Sacramento Republic. Orlando City manager Oscar Pareja joining us next here on Football Americas. Profe, congratulations. How are you feeling after that big win last night?
It was a big win. First of all, thank you for the invitation. And here we are enjoying, but at the same time preparing the next one, the next game in the league. But this achievement to go to the final with Orlando for our second team, for our second time, is very important. Just looking forward for that one game, yes.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about this semifinal, because New York scores just before halftime. I think it was stoppage time of the first half, and any coach will tell us, man, that's a time that you don't want to give up a goal. So you go down 1-0 in the semifinal just before the half. What are you thinking in that moment on the sideline?
It was a pretty good half for both teams. I think it was one of those games when New York was creating some chances, and we creating ours too. And in that moment, I thought that it was a time just to come to the break and just leave it there and reshape a couple things. But then DC hit us with that chance and that goal. The reaction for us was very good. The reaction was fantastic. I think the boys didn't even think that the game was over. In that moment, the half was over, and then they continue with the same energy. We created a sequence in the right, and then the set plays came, and then we were able to tie the game, and a very important and very key moment.
So it's 1-1 at the half. You score a goal 2 minutes into the second half. You score four goals in the second half. You end up winning this game 5-1. What changes did you make at halftime? What did you say at halftime to lead to that difference?
Well, I think the second half was way better. The solidness that we had, I thought I would reshape a couple of things in the middle. And we knew of the dynamic of New York and how they transition quick through the middle and the numbers that they put in that part of the field. We just reinforced that and trying to occupy the spaces that they were leaving in behind. And I thought the boys did a fantastic job on just occupying those spaces. It was not totally transition because we just kept playing the game and using our position in the game as well. It was a very good second half. Still, because we have been pursuing that polished thing that we're missing in the last games, and yesterday the boys were hiding that.
So there's a couple players on your roster that particularly intrigue me. One of them, I think, played about 85 minutes last night. That's Alexander Pato. Now, 10 years ago, if you would have told me Pato's going to be in the U.S. Open Cup semifinal for Orlando City, I think a lot of people would have said, what? So tell me about the impact that this player has made this year for you guys, because last year you really hardly got to use him, right?
Last year was difficult for Alex. He suffered an injury that took him too much time to recover, and at this time with the preseason and what I see from Alex is trying to connect with the group and trying to catch up as well on his rhythm. And he has added a lot of playing time in this semester. I think we start just to see much more frequent all those things that Alex can do. Yesterday was a good example. I think he was sharp, and he's getting more continuity. But at the same time, the energy for Alex has been very good.
Another player on your roster, and actually another player that played last night, Nicolas Gioacchini, came on for the last few minutes. This is a player that a lot of U.S. men's national team fans have a lot of interest in. What kind of player do you think you're getting at this point in his career?
Well, Nico's a young player. And he has a lot of tools, and we're first very happy to have him and add him in this time of our season. That versatility that Nico can bring to our team, it would help us. Yesterday, finally, we brought him. It has been here for a short period of time. But Nico can give us a lot of things in attack, and then he's a team player as well. Something that highlighted in a scouting from him and what he can do in the national team, or what he has done in the national team, what he did in French, what he was playing in Montpellier and Cannes. And hopefully we can bring all those things here in Major League Soccer. Nico is very excited to be here. We are very excited to have him. And those minutes yesterday just helped us just to welcome him and to the team.
All right, so let's talk about this final matchup, because it's against everybody's favorite Cinderella. You got Sacramento Republic. They're the team from the second tier from USL Championship. Oscar, are you ready to be the bad guys in this final?
Well, yesterday we gave a fantastic step. We surely will be prepared for this one. With all the respect what Sacramento has done so far, last night we saw their game, and beating Kansas City is not an easy task. And with that respect as well, we will go. But thinking that, I don't know if we're going to be the bad guys or the good guys, but those finals, you have the responsibility to win it.
So Orlando City, comes into existence at least at the MLS level in 2015. So this is season number 8 for the team. There's no major trophies. Not only would you get a major trophy, you win this, you also get that CONCACAF Champions League ticket. What would it mean to you, to Orlando City, to win the U.S. Open Cup?
It would mean a lot. It's, you said it well. This is the great opportunity to give them the first trophy to a city that is very passionate about the team, the community that is very engaged as well with the club. We had this opportunity in the MLS back playing the final against Portland. Unfortunately, we couldn't give them that trophy. We advanced in the last two playoffs as well. I think the team has been seen already in Major League Soccer as a different club. But it will be fantastic for the fans and for the club that we came in a real trophy and this opportunity. We're going to do everything that's in our hands to win it.
There he is, Oscar Pareja, manager of Orlando City. Thanks so much for the time. Appreciate you being here with us on Football Americas and continued success.
Well, thank you so much for the company. Thanks.
Mark your calendar. September 7th. We got to wait, but I have a feeling it's going to be worth it. Orlando City and Sacramento Republic for the U.S. Open Cup title. Perhaps a chance for a Football Americas road trip. We'll see.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And then Vardy goalwards.
You see, Stefan is off his line really quickly.
And Vardy saved by a combination of Stefan and the post.
Alvarez with the shot. And Lozano is scored by a very good stop by a hugely exposed Zach Steffen.
Our next guest on Football America, Zach Steffen of Middlesbrough and the U.S. men's national team. Zach, welcome to the show. Great to have you.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me on. It's good to be here.
So tell us a little bit about the move. How does the move, the on loan transfer to Middlesbrough, come about for you?
It's really just about getting games. I've had two good seasons at City, so I feel like I want to get out on the field and play. And Middlesbrough were interested, and it was just a good option. And they're competing for promotion, so it's a good spot, and with the World Cup coming up, I want to feel good. I want to be in rhythm.
What specifically about Middlesbrough attracted to you? I'm sure there were other options, but what was it about this club that kind of called your name and made it seem like the right fit at this time?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very historical club, a big club in England, and in the Championship. With a great manager and a very good goalkeeper coach, so that was definitely very attracting for me.
It's interesting because you mentioned the history of this club. I think it was founded in the 1800s. We don't have a lot of history in the United States. For an American, what does it mean to play for a club with such history? And I'm sure the kind of fan pressure that I'm assuming comes with that.
Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, 1800s and. MLS was created in 1994, 1995, 1996, I think. So that's it's pretty cool. And I know Brad Guzan was here, and they loved him. So I'm really excited about the season and to get games and just to improve on the field.
There's a lot of stereotypes, I feel like, out there about the Championship. Blood, guts, and thunder. What have people been telling you about what to expect at that level?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely heard all that as well. But the guys on the team actually say it's obviously competitive and it's physical, but they say it's not as physical as everybody hypes it up to be. So I guess we'll see.
We don't have promotion relegation here in the United States, but you're playing for promotion. Do you have any idea kind of how that'll affect the urgency of every game for you?
Yeah, I think I do a good job of taking each training one day at a time and each game one game at a time. So that's really all you can do, especially when you're trying to be promoted. You really just got to focus on each game and try and get 3 points in each game. And that's really all you can control, and that's what I'm going to be focusing on.
People will see Premier League to Championship, I think, you know, objectively they'll say, okay, that's a step down. Clearly it's the right step for you. Can we dig down a little bit on why you feel that way?
Yeah, I think I mean, I haven't played too many games at City. And yeah, I mean, obviously training with the best players in the world is good, but as a goalkeeper, you need to get games, you need to be in rhythm, you need to feel that feeling that games give you that training won't give you. So I really just wanted to come to a team that I could play and a team where I would be pushed and it would be a challenge. And I know the Championship is a very strong league and it's a lot of games and it's very physical. And I know Chris Wilder is a manager who wants to have possession of the ball. So I think it's a good fit.
How tough was it at City when, you know, you were getting the reps with the national team, but not necessarily at club level?
Yeah, I mean, it was the first time I was a second string ever, so that was definitely a tough adaptation. But at the same time, it was very good. I mean, I grew and got the best training that I've ever had. So I definitely grew as a player and got better. And now it's time to get some games.
I'm always curious kind of where goalies actually fall in this, because we debated on the show, we have Hercules Gomez, but he doesn't know anything about goalkeeping. He says, you know, y'all don't need to play as long as they're training at a good level. You know, that's good enough. We've had Casey Keller on. He's kind of gone the other way. Where do you come down on that debate, and how important is it?
Yeah, no, I'm gonna have to go against Hercules on this one. No, it's crucial, man. For we can't just be sitting on the bench and be training. It's the same as field players. They need to get game time and consistent game time to feel in rhythm, to stay match fit. And for us, it's more just mentally, to stay mentally fit. And so, yeah, I definitely think that goalkeepers are a different position than field players, obviously, and we need games consistently.
How did you manage then without the games to kind of keep your head and stay focused for the national team duty when you were at City?
Yeah, like I said before, it's just trying to focus one day at a time, one training at a time, one game at a time, and try not to think too much, because when you do that, that definitely hurts you on the field. And so I was just trying to take it all in, all the training, all the advice from Pep and the keeper coaches and Eddie. And then when my time was called, or my name was called, I would just try to do it, to do my best.
You mentioned Pep. I got to ask you about him next. What's the impact? Is there an area of influence that where you can say, okay, this is where Pep Guardiola has impacted me as a player?
I think it's more just confidence. He had confidence that I could step in there and play, and, because I mean, we don't train that much with the team. I mean, we do, but we always start out with the goalkeeping crew for the first half an hour, 45 minutes, and then we go in with the team. So I talk way more to the goalkeeping coach at City than I did Pep, but I think it was more just confidence and him believing in me to go out there and perform with the guys.
Zach, obviously, you know, anytime you brought in as a goalie on a Pep Guardiola team, people are saying, okay, this guy, you know, he can play with his feet. You're a guy who has shown us you're very confident with your feet. We also have that debate on this show, like how important is a goalkeeper's footwork, obviously in the modern game more so than the past, versus just like that raw shot-stopping ability. Give us the goalie's perspective, and how important is it to be able to do some of the things that you can do with your feet in a game?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the number one role as a goalkeeper is to keep the ball out of the net. So shot stopping, and there's a lot of aspects to goalkeeping, coming out and crossing and being in the right position and all that stuff. But yeah, shot stopping is obviously number one, and making sure that you keep the ball out of the net. And then, I mean, the game has evolved since the last 20, 30 years. And so now we got to be good with our feet, and we got to be kind of like another center back there, so we can have kind of a man up, have an advantage, and we can keep the ball and make the other team run and tire them out, and hopefully break them down to go and score some goals.
I mentioned at the top of the interview, you're at Middlesbrough on loan from Manchester City. You feel like you have any unfinished business at City or maybe in the Premier League still?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely have dreams and aspirations to play in the Premier League again, for sure.
At City, is that kind of still in the back of your mind? It's like, I have a return to City in my future?
We'll see, man. We'll see. Anything's possible. We'll see. I'm definitely just focused on this year and getting ready for the World Cup so we can have a nice little run in the World Cup.
You are one of the few guys, although now we see a lot more, who have kind of worn that label, American in the Premier League. What's it like being an American in the Premier League?
I mean, it's cool, man. A league that I've been watching since I can remember. It was definitely surreal, and it was busy, but it was really cool. I mean, just the competition and just watching how good the players are in that league and how good those teams are and the fans in that league. It's a special league.
There's obviously the popular show Ted Lasso, and you know, in that show there's a pretty heavy like anti-American bias. It's part of the narrative of the show. Did you ever feel that as a player, as a goalie in the Premier League, from the press or the fans?
I mean, no, not to the Ted Lasso extent, but yeah, no. I mean, it was Christian and I and a couple other guys. I mean, Josh Sargent was there. I didn't feel that.
What does it mean to the national team to have all you guys kind of not just getting to the Premier League, but getting to the Premier League at this time, kind of in the build-up to a World Cup?
Yeah, it's really good. It's really important for our players, the national team players, to get over to Europe and to play in these top leagues in the world and play against the best of the best. So that's what we need with the national team and that's how we're going to grow and that's how we're going to get better and make sacrifices being away from family and friends and being far from home and it's all going to pay off. And as long as we keep wanting to get better and just strive for greatness and it's what the national team needs and we're very young with the national team right now, but hopefully in the future all this will pay off.
I mentioned Ted Lasso. Let's talk about another American manager, Greg Berhalter. I wonder what his reaction was and what kind of conversations that you guys had were before and around this move, because you guys obviously have a relationship, you know, going way back.
Yeah, no, he's he's just happy that I'll be playing. He wants his players playing, and as long as we're in good situations and can be playing week in, week out, that's what, and so we can have a rhythm. That's what he wants for us.
You know him from your days with Columbus Crew. Has he changed a lot as a manager to kind of the guy that we see now in charge of the national team?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a very smart guy and he's a guy that does not get complacent. So he's always evolving. He's always adapting and growing. So he's definitely changed, but there's definitely some things that he does the same.
What's the level of comfort for you just to have a coach at the national team level that you've worked with before? I just can imagine that's got to be a huge advantage for you when you step into camp every time.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice that we have a good relationship and he knows how to push me and I know how to communicate with him. And we have a good relationship where we both want to grow and get better and we care about the team and the players around us. So we want to push them and it's a good relationship and a really good culture that he's brought into the national team.
You mentioned the World Cup a few times. Do you see yourself trying to hold on to the number one spot as the starter right now, or do you see yourself fighting for that job? Here we are 4 months from Qatar.
Yeah, I think every position out there is up for grabs. So, yeah, nothing's given, nothing's handed out for free. So we got to work, and that's what makes you better, competition. So definitely looking forward to the season, and then looking forward to the national team games and the lead up to the World Cup.
How do you handle that? Like, you're clearly working towards a World Cup, but the way to get there is very much in the day-to-day in front of you. Is it a challenge to kind of stay focused with that huge opportunity looming?
Not really. I think we're just used to it by now. It's just our job, and it's really all that time away, the World Cup being 4 months away. I mean, that's all you can do is work hard and then put in the sacrifice, the consistency, the effort each and every day, and the World Cup will come up, and hopefully we're all in rhythm and feeling good.
So tell me a little bit about the competition between you and the other goalies, like when you're in national team camp.
Yeah, Matt and Sean and Ethan. I think we have a really good crew, really good guys and guys that want to grow, guys that want to do well, guys that want to support the other one or the next one and push each other. So we have a really good group. I think we all get along really well, and that's exactly the type of culture that I want to have in a goalkeeping group. And we're excited for the future, and we know what we have to do at club level, and then we know what we have to do with the national team. And it's just about doing all those little things, all the little details, and doing it the right way.
It's a good group. There was a time when, you know, there were four or five Americans as starting goalies, or at least goalies in the Premier League. What do you think kind of overall state of American goalie right now?
Yeah, I think we have a lot of potential. I think we're coming into our primes, or we're in our primes, and these next two seasons are going to be very crucial for myself and for the rest of the gang. And we just got to buckle in and focus and take some steps forward.
Let's focus in on the World Cup before we let you get out of here, because I'm sure being over in England, there's a lot of people in your mentions, a lot of people talking about that USA-England game in the group phase. So let's focus in on that. When you saw that pop up, and you know your history, having been in that country for a long time, what'd you think of that potential matchup?
Yeah, I thought it, I mean, it's funny how the world works. It's funny how life works. Kind of like a full circle moment. And yeah, just watching the US-England games in the past. And so yeah, it's pretty cool, man. I'm definitely really looking forward to it and playing against some of the city teammates and all that. So it's gonna be a good time.
You mentioned full circle moment. Do you remember where you were when you were watching it when the U.S. got that draw in 2010? Was that a big memory for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I felt bad for Rob Green, but I was yelling. I was at home in my basement with my friends and family watching it.
Mm. You remember that deuce goal? You felt bad for Green, but you loved it from Clint, right?
Absolutely. We'll take it. We'll take it.
Well, what about this World Cup? I'm sure you heard the comments from Christian Pulisic, your teammate. You're going there with the intention to win the World Cup. You hear that from him. How similar is that to kind of the actual talk in the locker room amongst the guys?
Yeah, I mean, we believe that. Why go there and not have that mentality? That's exactly what the culture and the mentality that Greg and his staff has brought into the national team, and that's the type of mentality that we as competitors go into games and training. We want to win everything.
Do you see that as kind of the black and white line between success and failure at the World Cup? We've talked to Greg Berhalter on the show about it. Christian Pulisic mentioned it. We had the president of the federation on it. Is it group phase survival means it was a good World Cup for you?
What do you mean group stage survival?
So getting through the group stage, is that kind of the line for success for you?
No, not at all. That's what I mean, I don't want to say expect, but we, I mean, that's our first goal. We have many goals for the World Cup, and that's the first goal.
What does it take then to get out of the group phase when you look not just at England, but everybody else in the group?
Yeah, man, it's just being together and enjoying it, for one, just having fun and just taking it all in for what it is. And that's the World Cup, which is a very special for most of us, for all of us. It'll be, I think, for all of us, maybe besides DeAndre, it'll be our first World Cup. So take it all in, stay together, be a team, and then just going out there and executing our roles and our game plans.
So a lot of first World Cuppers. Where does the leadership come from then? How do you generate leadership in a group where there's not a lot of guys who have been through a World Cup?
I think a lot of the leadership comes from the guys who have been over here in Europe. And honestly, I want to say 75% of us are leaders on that team, because we all have the same goal. We all have the same drive. We're young, but I mean, we're not so young. I'm 27, but we have that drive.
Come on, bro, that's young.
Passion. Yeah, just kind of young. We're young, and we have that passion and energy and drive that we want to prove people wrong, and we want to prove the people that we can play and that we're forced to be reckoned with, and we believe that.
Mm. A lot of people would look at the lack of experience and say that's a weakness. It sounds to me like you view your youth as kind of a strength for this team.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like I said, we have a lot of motivation, a lot of passion, a lot of energy, and that'll go a long way.
Awesome. All right, there he is, Zach Steffen, one of the goalies for the U.S. men's national team, the starter for Middlesbrough in the championship. Zach, thanks so much for the time, man. Appreciate you here on Football Americas.
Yeah, man. Take care.
So there he is, Zach Steffen, a Premier League winner two times over with Manchester City, a Champions League finalist as well, now at Middlesbrough. By the way, for the extended version of our interview with Zach, download the Football Americas podcast. You can find it on the website or in the ESPN FC feed, wherever you download your podcasts. For more on American goalies in the championship, let's talk to an American goalie who played in the championship, Casey Keller, for what, four seasons back in the day at Millwall. Did they call it the championship back then, Casey?
Yes, it was, I think, the first year of the championship. But, you know, for me, the idea of the guys playing in the championship is great. I mean, I played, including cup games for Millwall in those four seasons, I played 202 matches in four seasons. I couldn't have asked for a better way to really, you know, kickstart my career by having a whole bunch of games in a short period of time and really kind of learning the position. Now, what's tricky for some of the guys now in the championship, they're not 21, 22 years old. You know, they're kind of in the middle of their career and having to almost take a step back to go forward. But this isn't unique for American goalkeepers. I mean, Friedel spent 4 years at Liverpool, played a handful of games, ended up going down to Blackburn in the championship. That first year, Blackburn gets promoted, and then he goes on to break some records with attendance, with consecutive matches. So, look, it's not by no means is it something where you're looking at it, or at least I'm looking at it and going that, wow, you know, this is a step back. No, for me, it's really a minor step back for hopefully a big leap forward.
All right, so let's put it then in the perspective of the U.S. men's national team, because, of course, we got the World Cup coming up. And as I see it right now, there are four goalies with a shot at Qatar. And really, Casey, if we break it down, it's kind of two different battles, right? There's the battle for the number one job, and then there's the battle for the number three job. Because even with 26 roster spots, I don't think we're taking four goalies to Qatar. So let's start with the battle for the starting job then. We'll kind of treat it as like a tail of the tape, right? If we were thinking about it from like a boxing matchup. If we focus first on Zach Steffen, where does he, in your opinion, have the edge over a guy like Matt Turner?
Well, I think there's a couple reasons why Zach probably has a little bit of an edge over Matt. He's got a longer history kind of in the national team programs. He's, you know, been at a higher level sooner than Matt has. He's he's also had a long history with Greg Berhalter. Now, there might be some question marks on kind of what's happened with that history in recent times. And but I think all things being equal, I think Zach probably gets the nod. Now, as we've seen over the last year or two, things have been far from equal. They've been all over the place for both these guys. And so it's it'll be really interesting also to see kind of what the word is out of Arsenal with how Matt's doing, you know, kind of through preseason and then into the start of the season, as we all assume that he's going to be the number two there, and kind of in a similar situation, will he get a chance to play regularly, let's say in the League Cup, and can then Arsenal have a run where he gets, you know, 5-6 games, you know, before maybe the World Cup? I look, like I said, Seb, we've talked about this a bunch, and you know, there's no ideal situation right now, but where I think Zach Steffen can possibly take that leap forward, and that's playing, you know, 15 games in the championship before the World Cup. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the one side of Zach's game that I have a little bit of a question on, is his durability. And that's the one thing about the championship. The championship is a grind. Mm. You are playing 6 to 7 matches a month if you have a good cup run. And there's no expectation at times, particularly when you're at a place like Middlesbrough and you want to get promotion, you want to maybe, you know, get to a quarterfinal or something where you've got some good opportunities for the club to make some extra money and some big ties. I don't see them playing this guy and then playing that guy. There's an expectation that they've got this guy on loan from a club like Man City because they want him to make a difference. Now, where Zach did make a difference was when the first part of the season at Fortuna Dusseldorf, he was getting rave reviews, and then unfortunately he was injured for the majority of the second half and really didn't feature. So that's going to be my question, is the durability of Zach and how he does having to play a whole bunch of games in a short period of time.
Yeah, Casey, to that point, I feel like if there is one area where Matt Turner has the clear edge, it's his availability, right? He seems to always pretty much be available to the national team and to Greg Berhalter. Zach Steffen hasn't always been available. Is there another area in terms of kind of goalkeeping technical ability where you see that Turner may have an edge on Steffen, or is it really just a clean sweep for Zach Steffen in your eyes?
Well, I actually think Zach's probably a little better technical shot stopper. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, that Matt's probably a little better technical shot stopper, where Zach is such a great athlete and probably better with his feet. But then in the end, when you're going into a World Cup, you're going to need your goalkeeper to have to make saves. You're not too worried about him playing out of the back. At least that's a bonus if that happens. In the end, if he has to come up with a big save to keep you in the tournament, you know, that's paramount. Both these guys have proven they can make saves. There's no question about that. I think probably Matt's just a little more technical. Zach maybe a little bit more athletic. And then it'll be interesting to see which one's in form. I know you and I have teased Hercules in the past that he doesn't think that it's necessarily paramount that a goalkeeper is playing week in and week out. Look, I would agree with Herc if the goalkeeper's 35 and has 400 league games or 500 league games under his belt plus 50 to 75 caps. You know, then I think, yes, he can kind of build off of that, you know, lifelong experience that they've gained. But, you know, these are two guys that don't have those kind of numbers or anywhere near those kind of numbers. So I think it's really crucial that there is some form. Now, is that form, you know, every other week in a cup situation? Is it week in and week out? Whatever it is, but there needs to be regular first team appearances.
Okay, so Zach Steffen versus Matt Turner is the battle for number one. Let's focus on the battle for number three, the third goalkeeper spot. We really don't talk about this position a whole lot, but it is an interesting one. You got Sean Johnson, of course, of New York City FC, and Ethan Horvath, who just made a loan move to Luton Town in the championship as well. I guess we'll start with Sean Johnson here. Casey, where do you think he has the edge over Ethan Horvath in a goalie battle?
Well, I think Sean has that little bit of an edge in that he's very well familiar in the national team programs. He's been coming in for years. He's worked with the current goalkeeping coach, both for club and country. He's proven that he can be that guy without the expectation that he's going to play, that he's a good team guy, that he's going to do, you know, whatever's needed to be a part of the national team. And he's been playing regularly for several years. Ethan, had a little bit of a spell where he came in both with Klinsmann and with Greg and proved himself. But then the problem is he gets back to his club environment and he can't play week in and week out. And that's not just, a year or a new manager, or a new club. It's been pretty consistent now for 5-6 years. And I think that's the tricky part. Can Ethan get somewhere? And obviously he's going to have this opportunity at Luton. Can he truly establish himself, prove himself, play, every minute of every game and until World Cup selection comes around? That's what I want to see. And then if he is doing that, he obviously has to be playing well, because if he's not, then he would be replaced. It's the what you know with Sean Johnson to can Ethan get himself into a situation where they look at him and they say, okay, he's better.
So I keep coming back to your points about experience, right? And that's the one area where Sean Johnson has like a huge edge, not just over Horvath, over all the goalies in this pool. Everybody in this pool is 27, 28 years old. You look at the amount of first team games they've played, they're all right around 130, 140. Sean Johnson is almost at 400 games in his career, Casey. How much does experience matter for a goalie, and specifically in this race?
Well, you have to think of that. If you get down to your third choice goalkeeper, you've had some issues. You've had some injury issues or some suspensions or something going on. So to know that you've got a guy that's kind of been through the mill a little bit. Now, obviously, what would be ideal is if Sean had 100 of those games of those 400, in a championship, in a Bundesliga, even a Bundesliga 2 or something, with just that little bit more, international experience. But that's not the case. But at least, like I said, he's got the experience around Gold Cups. He's got the experience around the national team in different environments for many, many years. And like I said, it would be, I think, maybe a first in any World Cup if the third goalkeeper had to play.
Yes. As you said, if you're playing the third goalie, something has gone terribly, terribly wrong. Something has gone truly off the rails. That never happens here on Football Americas, especially when it comes to our technology. He's Casey Keller. Thanks for joining us here on the show. We'll see you again soon, yeah?
Thanks, Abby.
Great to have Casey on the show, man, who played in the Bundesliga, La Liga, of course, which you can see on ESPN+. You know what else you can see on ESPN+? That's right, the championship. You might see Zach Steffen playing for Middlesbrough this weekend. They've also been linked to Matthew Hoppe. They're going up against West Brom. That's right, the home of Daryl Dike. Coverage starts Saturday, 12:25 in the afternoon Eastern time on ESPN+.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Turning our attention now to Mexican football. Santiago Jimenez is in Holland. This is not a drill. The 21-year-old Mexican international set to complete his transfer from Cruz Azul to Feyenoord. Again, ESPN reporting the Dutch side going to pay 4 million euros for 50% of his rights. For a Dutch perspective on this move, let's hear from our friends at ESPN Netherlands. Here's Cecilia Lagos from our studios in Amsterdam.
Hi, Sebastian. How are you? What's being made of the arrival of Santiago Jimenez here in the Netherlands? Well, it's been a huge, huge topic in the media and among the fans. There are really, really high, high expectations about what he can do. Can he bring all the goals and all the success and the great performances that he had with Cruz Azul here in Feyenoord? Well, he doesn't feel the pressure, and this is what he had to say upon his arrival at Schiphol.
No, porque la verdad es que esta liga ha tenido muy buenos jugadores mexicanos, sé de la grandeza del Feyenoord. No, pues no es presión, sino es fútbol y hay que disfrutarlo al máximo.
As I said, the expectations are really high. It's basically been the only topic about Feyenoord for the whole week. And the four top scorers of last season for Feyenoord, they are left this season. Sinisterra, Hustil, Linsen, Cyril Dessers. And all of them together scored more than 80 goals. So they really, really need those goals back. And Santiago Jimenez is the greatest hope for that. So he is coming now as a great start and as the great star too. So basically, they are really, really hoping that he can bring back those goals that were left with this four top scorers.
Thank you very much, Cecilia. Bit of a good news, bad news week then for Mexican number nine, Raul Jimenez. We showed you him scoring over the weekend for Wolves in a game against Besiktas, actually a second goal of the preseason. The bad news was in that same game, he came off injured. Wolves has confirmed it's an injury to his MCL in his knee, as well as a minor strain to the adductor muscle. Jimenez expected to miss the start of the season, some reports claiming it could take as long as 8 weeks. Everybody starts to worry when you hear that number, 8 weeks. Now, good thing for Raul's wife, who's on Twitter, Daniela Basso, and she took to social media to clear things up, to stamp out rumors of a potential surgery for Raul Jimenez. Nope, she's claiming just a couple of weeks of rehab for Jimenez, who is out injured for Wolves ahead of the Premier League season. For more on this, let's welcome into the show Mauricio Pedrosa, who joins us from the Football America studios in Los Angeles. Mau, I have to know, do you have your tattoo artist picked out? Because in recent weeks, you've been saying, hey, I'm going to get a Santiago Jimenez tattoo if he starts in the World Cup. And in this week, he's gone to Europe and Raul Jimenez goes down. Where on your body are you going to get? Where are you going to get it?
I only have one very small tattoo. I don't know if you're going to be able to see it. It's right here. So I'm planning on getting the same font, same size, right below my Live Forever tattoo. That's where El Bebote is going to be stamped on my arm, Seb. I hope you don't throw me under the bus like you did with Herc earlier on the show. I heard you.
Meep, meep. That was the bus running over Hercules Gomez twice on the show. Actually, maybe three times. I threw him under the bus. Zach Steven then backed the bus up over Herc. And then Casey Keller ran it over him a third time just for good measure. All right, so enough about all that. Let's get to some of the bigger business right now that's happening around Mexican soccer. Specifically, now the case of a player that you and I both love, and that's Diego Lainez, who's close to a loan move to Sporting Braga in Portugal from Betis in Spain. What do we make of this? Mau, is it a good move or a bad move for Linus? And of course, we always have to put it in the context of this is a World Cup year, and he's very much trying to make his spot on the team for Qatar.
This is fantastic news. I was able to talk with someone in Diego Linus' camp. They said it's 100% confirmed that Diego Lainez will play for Sporting Braga starting next week. And it is a great move for different reasons. Number one, this source told me that Diego Lainez talked to the manager, and you cannot always give 100% guarantees, but Diego Lainez is set to be a starter for a team that finished fourth last season in the Portuguese league, just behind the big names like Sporting, Porto, and Benfica. Sporting Braga came fourth. They made it all the way to the quarterfinals in Europa League. They're going to play again Europa League. So he's going to see the minutes that he was not able to see while playing for Betis. So with all these dark clouds above Diego Lainez's career in the past couple of years, I think this is the best news he's gotten in a long, long time.
Yeah, there's not a lot to complain about here. The one thing that jumped out to me that was a little, it's not surprising, disappointing, is the financials, right? I think the buyout option here is 7 million euros. Betis paid 14 million euros for this player when they bought him from Club America. Of course, some of that value goes down based on years left on the contract, etc. But you would like to see a player's transfer value going up as he continues his career in Europe. That said, I really like this move as well, and I wonder how you think about it in comparison to Almeria, right? Because that's what we were talking about last week. And when I think about it, I love this. Here's the reason why. It's a team at the top of the table. And no matter what Almeria did in La Segunda División, now, we know a team that's coming up to La Liga, they're not gonna have the ball, right? They're gonna be fighting against relegation. They're gonna be battered, you know, week in and week out. Is a player like Diego Lainez going to get on the ball and have the freedom to do what he wants if your team's fighting relegation? As you point out, this team's fourth last year. They're going to be playing in Europa League. There's a ton of games. I love that it's Europa League. Not just is it more games,
that's
more
right.
opportunity, but on top of that, it's a showcase. It's a showcase for a player on loan. So I'm with you, man. I love the move. Final thoughts, real quick.
I also believe that the Portuguese league has proved to be actually friendly to Mexican players. This was probably the better idea 4 years ago when he had a chance to play either in Holland, in Portugal, or Spain. He chose Spain. That was a mistake, but the Portuguese league is actually very, very friendly for Mexican players. I love the move.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I was looking up the history of Mexican players in Portugal. It goes all the way back to Manuel Negrete back in the 80s. So plenty of history there. Let's hope it goes well for Diego Lainez. Great work getting the details there from the Diego Lainez camp. Let's talk a little Liga MX here, because Chivas were in action last night against Querétaro, a team they hadn't beaten since November of 2019. Chivas hasn't beaten anybody in four games so far this season before this one. 26th minute, though, Sebastián Pérez Buquet, mi tocayo Mau, getting Chivas off to a good start.
Yeah, but it's all Alexis Vega. He's been by far not only Chivas' best player, maybe best player in Liga MX. Another assist for Alexis Vega.
Querétaro, though, getting it right back just before the half. Ariel Nahuelpan with the header to make it 1-1, Mau.
Yeah, and that's one rare mistake by Chivas goalkeeper, Guacho Jimenez. I know it's a wet field, but as a professional goalkeeper, you should be able to stop that.
So Chivas needs goals. Who do they go to? Santiago Ormeño, the new guy. And he gets, excuse me, I'm getting choked up. A chance here, but oh, Mau, a terrible miss.
You cannot miss that. It's your first game as Chivas player. You are El Gran Refuerzo. He missed it again. Another great assist by Alexis.
Okay, so a foul committed here. The refs helping Chivas. Mau, we never heard of this before, have we?
Chivar. We call it Chivar in Mexico.
Even when there's not VAR involved, it's still Chivar. The VAR, though, eventually would come back to bite Chivas because Querétaro get a late penalty. What'd you think of this?
Yeah, I thought it was a good call, good review by VAR, but it was Santiago Ormeño with the jersey pull. He's been killed by Chivas social media. That miss and then giving up the penalty kick in the end, 2-2. Not a great result for Chivas, Seb.
Nope. 5 games, 4 points, 0 wins. They are now 14th out of 18 teams in Liga MX. So, Mau, is it time for panic or calm for Ricardo Cadena, the manager of Chivas?
Absolutely panic. Querétaro is one of the, let me rephrase this, by far the worst team in Mexican soccer in the past year. They have won only 2 games of the last 16 Liga MX matches. And Chivas was outplayed, outperformed, maybe even outcoached. Chivas' best player, even with that mistake, was Guacho Jimenez. Querétaro dominated not only to the eyesight, but to the eye test. But statistically, Querétaro was the better team. So at this point, I'm giving up. And Chivas has to make a tough decision. I know it's early in the season, Seb, but is Ricardo Cadena really the right guy, the right guy in command? I don't think so. Let's go back to Leaño's time, right? We all know he was not a manager. He was a catastrophe. Now you name another guy who's having his first experience as a first division manager. It was an accident waiting to happen. This is big, big panic time for Ricardo Peláez and Chivas.
Yeah, man, it is not going well for Chivas. I'm with you in terms of alarm over calm here, though I'm not that surprised, right? To your point about Leaño, the knock against him was red cards, ill discipline, late goals. Cadena comes in and fixes that. Cadena, yes, and of course the relationship with the owner. But Cadena comes in and fixes that for a moment, which is why he eventually gets the interim label pulled off. Well, what's happened this season? All those things are back for Chivas. They got red cards in 2 of their 5 games. They give up a late goal last night. They blew a lead in the second half against Santos, against San Luis, your beloved Atletico San Luis. They gave up a goal in first half stoppage time. So the discipline is back. And Mau, if I'm looking at the schedule, man, for Chivas here, I'm worried. I got the date August 13th circled on my calendar. It's the next Clásico Tapatío. And before that, you got Pachuca and Mazatlán in league. And you have the League's Cup showcase next Wednesday in Los Angeles. So you got a friendly mixed in there as well for Chivas. against the Los Angeles Galaxy. You go through those three games and they don't go well. You get to the Clásico Tapatío and things go really bad against a very good Atlas team. He's gone, right? I mean, it's August 13th or bust.
And there's no time. Liguilla starts, believe it or not, in a couple of months. So if Ricardo Peláez, Chivas sporting director, if he still believes there's a chance with this team to make a run to La Liguilla, change has to come now. Antonio Mohamed was just relieved of his duties as a manager in Brazil. And we all know that Ricardo Peláez and Mohamed have a relationship. It wasn't always a pretty relationship, but now he's a name that Chivas has to take in consideration. Ricardo Cadena, there's a reason why he was never a manager in Primera División. He was always in Liga de Ascenso, lower tier, lower level soccer in Mexico. But if they're going to make the call, they have to make it now.
All right, let's move from Chivas to another grande. Elsewhere in Liga MX, Pumas, we got to see Dani Alves make his Liga MX debut last night as Pumas played to a 1-1 draw against Mazatlan. How about that? Dani Alves making his debut wearing exactly the number you thought he would wear, the number 33. He played 90 minutes, kind of in a different role, a little bit more in midfield than in defense. And in the end, he did have an impact in this game, providing the assist on Nicolas Freire's 90th minute equalizer. By the way, the draw for Pumas, their fourth tie in five games this season. Let's hear from Alves after the match.
Bueno. No, no ha podido ser la victoria, pero para empezar no está mal. Apenas llegué y ya tuve que jugar los 90 minutos para poder sentir también el campeonato, sentir los compañeros y poder sentir los adversarios, saber cómo es el campeonato y poco a poco pues uno se va adaptando, se va sabiendo y conociendo los compañeros que tengo a mi lado. Queda muchas cosas por hacer. El equipo tiene personalidad, tiene muchas ganas y con esas ganas pues seguramente vamos a escalar en posición.
And that was the story of the night in Liga MX and maybe beyond. What grade are you giving Dani Alves for his Liga MX debut?
So you know I'm all for strong opinions, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I do not have a strong opinion here. I didn't love it, but I didn't hate it. And that's probably what we will come to expect from a 39-year-old player in Liga MX, one of the best players in his position of his generation, Dani Alves. But listen, I don't get the fact, I don't understand why he played 90 minutes. After 45 minutes, he was done. He was tired. It's not easy to play it in Mexico City's altitude, just with three training sessions. And I'll say this is what concerns me. It absolutely looked like Pumas was adapting to Dani Alves instead of Dani Alves adapting to Pumas. That shouldn't be the case. And it's all reverence, it's all celebrations, it's fireworks for Dani Alves. But the team has to be very, very aware. He's not gonna change the course of the season for this team. So he has to adapt what they already were doing well, not the other way around.
Yeah, if I were to give him a grade, I'd definitely give him a passing grade, right? And I'm pretty generous.
Yeah.
I'd probably give it like a B minus, like a C plus. B minus. Yeah, I always needed generous grades when I was in school, so I'm more likely to bump it up a notch. Look, you said it right there. He looked every bit, not just 39 years old, but 39 years old coming off an off season, right? And to your point about the altitude, I was like, man, it must be hot in Mexico City. So I looked up the temperature. It was only like 60 degrees. It was 80% humidity. So you had the altitude, you had the humidity, you had the first game, you had the 90 minutes, and it looked kind of bleak. What I would say, though, is if your point is right, and Dani Alves is not going to change the trajectory of this team, let's not grade him on 90 minutes. Let's grade him on moments. And for me, they're down 1-0. He gets the assist in the 90th minute. For that moment alone, that's why I'm giving him maybe that B minus, that B plus. Look at that. Look at that generous grading.
Very generous.
I could have benefited from that in my schooling years as well. There he is, Mauricio Pedrosa. Catch him 5 days a week on Ahora o Nunca over on ESPN Deportes. Mau, as always, thanks for the time. And thank you for being the only person on this show not to run Herc over with that bus.
Anytime. See you next week, Sebi. Thanks.
There it is. Yes, we will be seeing Mau next week out in Los Angeles for some big events. We'll talk about that in just a second. But first things first, Jozy Altidore is reportedly heading to Puebla on loan from the New England Revolution. How about that? According to Jeff Carlisle. The 32-year-old could feature even as early as Saturday against Mal's beloved Atletico San Luis. As a result of this, I'm putting the over-under on Josie making the World Cup team at 25%. We'll get Herc's answer on whether that's over or under on Monday's edition of the show. I mentioned the League's Cup Showcase. We will be there. When I say we, I'm talking about Mao, I'm talking about Herc, I'm talking about Seb, I'm talking about all of Football Americas for this great doubleheader next Wednesday on ESPN. Galaxy against Chivas, LAFC against Club America. One more bit of news around Major League Soccer. As first reported by the Washington Post, David Ochoa is moving from RSL to DC United in exchange for allocation money. The 21-year-old Mexican international hasn't played for RSL in MLS this season, claiming at one point that he wasn't allowed to train with the team. Ochoa is out of contract at the end of the season, so it'll be interesting to see if this is a short-term or long-term move for Ochoa in the nation's capital. MLS on ABC and ESPN Deportes on Saturday. Nice little Western Conference showdown. Minnesota United against the Portland Timbers. Coverage starts at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Thanks to everybody for joining us tonight. A couple other notes before we get out of here. Congratulations to Vancouver. They won the Canadian Championship, punching themselves a ticket in the next CONCACAF Champions League. Also worth noting, today is hashtag National Soccer Day, according to social media. So enjoy that for what it's worth. Enjoy your weekend and be ready for next Monday's show, the highly anticipated return of Hercules Gomez from vacation. That's it for us. I'll see you on Monday here on Football Americas.